The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Seth, you haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 295 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Saturday, October 5th, 2013. I am the Solid Monster. You are currently listening to the show on thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, or in iTunes. At least I hope you are. It's one of those three methods. And I thank you for tuning in. And you know what this weekend is. This is a big weekend here. October 6th, coming up tomorrow. That's right. It's Battleground Sunday for WWE. But nobody cares about that. No, see, it's Bruno Sammartino and Dixie Carter's birthday. Yes, both of them share a birthday. Two people who cannot possibly have anything less in common. Both share a birthday on October 6th. Bruno turns 78 years old tomorrow. I had the honor of being there to see him inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame earlier this year, and to meet him in person at the Feast of San Gennaro just a few weeks ago, which was a big thrill for me. He looks great. As for Dixie, she turns, well, I was raised a gentleman, and a gentleman never tells a woman's age. I guess it wasn't much of a happy birthday for her if you saw the end of Impact on Thursday. And believe me, I have things to say about that. And actually, on that note, that's actually the perfect segue into my plug here for the Sound Off Superstore. I mentioned it last week. We now have an online store where you can purchase the official Solid Monster Sounds Off logo t-shirt. There's a Ringer shirt on there. I said, as the weeks go on, I'll be adding additional shirts, additional items. You're certainly welcome to submit suggestions and ideas for shirts and items that you'd like to see in there. And I added a new shirt to the store just this past week. It is the Total Nonstop Absurdity t-shirt, which is rather appropriate after the ending of Impact on Thursday, I think. So swing by the store, check out the new shirt. Comes in all sorts of colors, sizes. You can check out the other shirts while you're there as well. The address for the store is very simple, very easy to remember, solidmonster.spreadshirt.com. That's the official address, solidmonster.spreadshirt.com. And to all the people who emailed me and tweeted me, because we have a lot of international listeners, and it's my fault for not mentioning this last week, the shirts do ship internationally. I can't run the whole list of countries. It's a whole bunch of countries. I'm pretty sure that everybody listening to this show probably lives in a region where they ship to, but if you're not sure, go to the store. There's a link, a help link at the top, and if you navigate around, there is a listing, I guess, of the different postal fees, depending on where you live. So yes, we do ship internationally, and please do support the show, and we're going to be adding new stuff as the weeks go on, so definitely check that out. I also want to give thanks here to a couple of different people, actually a few people, who made PayPal donations this week. So my thanks to Bill Mitchell, or the professor, as I like to call him. And a happy birthday to Big Bill as well. He and I share the same birthday. James Ward, Aaron Wright, and Kieran Brown for their PayPal donations. And, of course, Wiza, who's been a big supporter of the show as well. Thank you all. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you could do so on thesolidmonster.com. There's a little PayPal box on there. Give what you can. Every little bit certainly is appreciated and goes towards helping this show. Before we move on here, I just want to mention really quickly, I had the opportunity this week to watch the new Triple H Thy Kingdom Come DVD set, which I guess they're billing as the most complete Triple H DVD set that they've done. There's a lot of rare footage on there, I will say. Some footage of him as a youngster, footage of him working basically as an indie guy when he first broke into the business and was training at Killer Kowalski School. There's some cool backstage clips as well throughout the DVD from after, you know, big pay-per-view matches, people coming through the curtain and all that. So I watched the DVD and some of the matches on it as well. What I'm planning on doing is I will record a YouTube review, much the same way I did for Bob Holly's book, The Hardcore Truth. I don't know when that's going to go up. It will be sometime in the next few weeks. It's just a matter of me finding the time to actually sit down and record this thing. I got a lot of thoughts on the DVD. Good, bad, and everything in between. So look for that on YouTube sometime in the next few weeks. If you're not subscribed to us on YouTube, my username is The Solid Monster, all one word. You can find our channel, subscribe there, and stay tuned for that. WWE Battleground takes place this Sunday on pay-per-view live from Buffalo, New York. I just had to play that. Every time I hear the name Buffalo, I think of Tatanka. I can't help myself. If you were a WWF fan growing up in the 80s or the early 90s and you heard that album, you're probably like me. Whenever I hear Buffalo, it's the first thing I think of is Tatanka and that stupid song, so I apologize. But yeah, the pay-per-view is in Buffalo this weekend, and plain and simple, honestly, this show is a cash grab. That's really all that this pay-per-view is. Nothing more, nothing less. There really is no good reason for this pay-per-view to be taking place. They already have a pay-per-view later this month. It's a little show called Hell in a Cell, which used to be a big deal. I guess to some, maybe it still is. But when you look at this card, not that there aren't some good matches, and this could turn out to be one of those shows that you look back on and say, wow, that was an excellent card. You know, we had two or three great matches. Maybe. I hope so for the people who are paying for it. But I look at this and I go, why is there a pay-per-view this weekend? There really is no good reason for it. But let's run through the card here really quick. We'll go through the matches. We'll start from the bottom, work our way up to the top, and I'll give my predictions along the way here. Dolph Ziggler on the pre-show. He is going one-on-one with Mr. Money in the Bank, Damian Sandow. I'm going to go with Dolph Ziggler in this match. Not that Dolph's getting any sort of real push lately, but Damian Sandow loses every single match he is in. And this ties in a little bit to one of my other predictions for the actual pay-per-view in terms of what I think may happen with Sandow. So I'm going with Ziggler here. On the show itself, we have Bray Wyatt and Kofi Kingston, a match that was basically just thrown together for no reason at the last minute on TV this week. I'll go with Bray Wyatt. He has yet to lose a match, and I see no reason for him to lose to Kofi Kingston, of all people. Curtis Axel defends the Intercontinental Championship against R-Truth. Curtis Axel, boy, talk about guys that are on a losing streak of late. He wins matches here and there. I'm sure he must win on Main Event. I admit Main Event is not a show that I check out regularly. But certainly on the main shows, Raw, SmackDown, not exactly a sterling win-loss record for the champ. Throw him a bone, I say. Give him a win over somebody. R-Truth, why not? So I'm going to go with Curtis Axel retaining the title. We have AJ Lee defending the Divas Championship against Brie Bella. And even though, to me, it makes absolutely no sense to take the title off AJ when they just put Tamina Snuka with her as her new bodyguard, I'm going to go ahead and pick Brie Bella. She'll be my wild card pick here. I don't think I'm reaching that much. I think now that they're acknowledging the whole Daniel Bryan, Brie Bella relationship on TV, I mean, hell, Brie Bella was technically part of the main event on Raw this past Monday. So if the idea, perhaps, is that Bryan is going to win the championship, either this Sunday or at some point soon, I could see them wanting to do a deal maybe for Total Divas. You know, they're recording right now for the second half of the season. Wouldn't it be a feel-good moment, especially on the same pay-per-view, to have Brie Bella win a championship and have her soon-to-be husband win one as well? So, again, makes no sense to me, but I'll go with Brie Bella. And by the way, what the hell happened to Natalya? It was just a couple of weeks ago on TV that Natalya was seemingly in line for a title shot. All of a sudden, Brie Bella snuck up on her, and now she's in the championship match, and Natalya is nowhere to be heard from. I think that's kind of bizarre. The Shield will be in tag team action against the Rhodes family, Goldust and Cody Rhodes. The proviso here, the stipulation, whatever you want to call it, is that if the Rhodes family wins, and they will have Dusty in their corner, they get their jobs back. Cody gets his job back. He was fired, if you remember. And Dustin, apparently, will be back as well. And actually, in real life, apparently, Dustin has signed a short-term contract with the company. So Goldust, at least for a short time, is back officially. But that's the stipulation for the match. I'm going to go with the Rhodes family here. I don't think that's too much of a stretch to think that maybe Big Show may get involved. There may be an assist from the big guy. Maybe he knocks out Roman Reigns or something and helps the Rhodes family win and stirs up some trouble with Triple H and Stephanie and has to pay the price for it on Raw the next night. So I'm going to go with the Rhodes family. They get their jobs back on TV at that point. Just in time for them to be part of maybe a Survivor Series match if they want to do a Team Bryan against Team Orton match at the pay-per-view next month. CM Punk one-on-one with Ryback. This is a step down for Punk. Punk is relegated now to a feud with Ryback. You know my thoughts on Ryback. Ryback's not a bad guy. Ryback can be entertaining in his role when he comes out and says, you know, the big guy's here. And he has his moments, but Ryback, to me, he died a long time ago, the Ryback character. They killed him dead. They put Paul Heyman with him. He's the new Paul Heyman guy now. They're going to give him some kind of push. But it's a weird situation here because you have two guys, you can make the argument, who both really, really need a win on pay-per-view. CM Punk, after having 434 consecutive days as WWE champion and pay-per-view win after pay-per-view win. In fact, it was a year ago this month at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view when Ryback filled in for an injured John Cena. It was CM Punk who handed Ryback his first loss after Brad Maddox, who was the referee, gave Ryback a low blow. That was the beginning of the end for Ryback. Now, had they not had The Rock signed to a Royal Rumble match and big plans to build, you know, Punk after being champion for so long, ultimately dropping the belt to The Rock, I'd have to think that that probably would have been, you know, Ryback's shining moment. There's a pretty good chance he probably would have won the championship on that show a year ago. Didn't work out that way. And it's well documented. Ryback's pay-per-view record since then has been a complete, colossal joke. It's comical, the fact that this guy went on such a losing streak, and yet on television he was portrayed as this big, dominant monster, but he couldn't buy a win on pay-per-view to save his life. All of a sudden, CM Punk, after losing the title, he lost to The Rock twice, he lost to The Undertaker, went away, came back, beat Chris Jericho, he lost at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, lost to Brock Lesnar. Technically, I guess he beat Curtis Axel in the first fall of that match at Night of Champions, then lost to Paul Heyman, of all people. So now this is the first match in the feud between Punk and Ryback. Who wins? You know, Ryback probably needs the win more than anybody else. Punk's not going to get hurt by a loss. Ryback, though, they're trying to build credibility. And so, in theory, you would give the win to Ryback. Ryback should win. But I'm going to go ahead, I'll pick CM Punk by disqualification. I think if there's one match where there could be some kind of screwy finish or a DQ, this is probably going to be it. So I'll just go with Punk by DQ. But obviously they're going to keep this feud going, I would imagine, until the next pay-per-view, put these guys inside the cell, would be my guess. Alberto Del Rio and Rob Van Dam for the World Heavyweight Championship. This will be a hardcore rules match, so right up RVD's alley. I'm going to go at Rob Van Dam. Now, let me just say here that there's been no word on what his contractual status is. He may well be done for now with the company after the pay-per-view this weekend. I don't think he's going to go away. I think, you know, if he goes away for a while, he'll be back. It's not like he's going to leave and go back to TNA or anything like that. But his contract status is a little murky right now, and it seems like WWE may not be too happy with him, hence the way he was treated on Raw, you know, a week ago when Randy Orton killed him. He came out for that 11-on-3 handicap match and was the first person pinned. Apparently there was a message behind that. So you would think that Alberto Del Rio probably going to retain the World Heavyweight Championship. I'm going to say that RVD wins the title and then Sandow cashes in successfully and wins the title from him. That way, if they have this unresolved situation hanging over everybody's heads with RVD, well, let them resolve it. He'll disappear from TV for a couple of weeks. And you go in a different direction. Sandow has been made out to be a complete joke ever since he won that briefcase. That briefcase has been kryptonite for him. And Dolph Ziggler went through the same thing. Daniel Bryan went through the same thing. And things turned out pretty good for him. So why not put the title on Sandow? If Cody Rhodes ends up winning his match and he's back, he's reinstated, got his job back, all of a sudden, you can build a Cody Rhodes-Damian Sandow feud for the world title. Because if you remember, Cody Rhodes beat him once or twice? He beat him at SummerSlam, and I think he may have beaten him again on TV. And the announcers at the time established the fact that if Sandow were to cash in and become the world champion, Cody, by virtue of beating him, put himself in a position to be the number one contender. So unless they're just going to forget about that and pretend it never happened, all of a sudden, Cody gets his job back, Damian wins the title, you can revisit that feud and take it in that direction. What they do with Del Rio, I don't know, and quite frankly, I don't care. I will say, though, that I'm kind of torn. I could see them turning Ricardo, you know, having Ricardo turn on RVD and go back with Del Rio, even though, you know, the way that Del Rio beat the hell out of Ricardo when they broke up, that was a hell of a beatdown. So they're going to have a hell of a story if they're going to reunite the two of them. But it may be the best thing for him. You know, Del Rio on his own is kind of like, yeah, you know. But Ricardo also. Ricardo was very entertaining. I think Ricardo was great. But him and RVD just, it doesn't work. Him and Del Rio, it's a more natural combo. So if they want to put the two of them back together, by all means, you know, go ahead and do that. But I'm going to say RVD wins the title and Sandow cashes in. Main event, Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton for the WWE Championship, the vacant WWE Championship. It's still being held in what they would say is abeyance. I guess that's their word of the month. I have to say, I am stunned, absolutely stunned, that they did not add a stipulation to this match. It is so unlike WWE to have what is now, I mean, this is not even a rematch. It's the rematch of the rematch. This is not the first encounter between these two men. There were rumors of maybe an Iron Man match a few weeks ago that was reported in a few different places. I would have loved to have seen an Iron Man match. I think if you let those guys go out there and do their thing, it could be a hell of a match. But this is just a plain old WWE Championship match, which means you're inviting the possibility that somebody interferes, there's a screwy finish, count out, DQ. My problem with it is this. They have established that the outcome of this match cannot be trusted. You had people last month calling their cable company to demand a refund because Daniel Bryan won the title and then was stripped of it the next night, and they felt cheated. Now, it's a stupid thing to do. You know what I mean? If you bought the pay-per-view, you got the advertised matches. You don't really have a leg to stand on, as far as I'm concerned, you know, getting your money back. If you weren't entertained or you felt ripped off, I get that. Then don't order the pay-per-view. I bet you there's a lot of people who order Night of Champions who aren't going to touch Battleground because they don't trust WWE. What's to say that if Daniel Bryan wins the championship and has that great show-closing moment with Brie, you know, both of them now are title holders, that Triple H won't turn around on Raw the next night and pull the same shit that he did last month? I mean, I don't think they would do the same thing twice, but you can't trust them. You can't trust the outcome of this match. So in a way, it almost doesn't even matter. So they've got another pay-per-view in 3 weeks. I assume we're going to get another Bryan Orton match. Somebody will be the champion, or maybe not. Who's to say that there has to be a champion? Maybe there's some sort of draw or a no contest at Battleground, and they decide the title inside the Hell in a Cell later in the month. I think there's a very strong possibility of that happening. But if I had to pick a winner, if you put a gun to my head, I'm going to go with Daniel Bryan. I could see them wanting to do the happy finish, the happy ending with him and Brie both winning championships. So Daniel Bryan would be my pick. And that's the card. Not a very inspiring lineup. I could think of better things to spend $50 on. I think it's just a very skippable show. Like I said, a total cash grab. If you miss this pay-per-view, I feel like you're not going to miss much. And if there is some sort of finish in the main event, they're just going to turn around the next night and basically stick their middle finger up and say F you. So if you order the show, I think you do so at your own risk. And this time, don't call your cable company and ask for a refund, okay? Because that's just completely ridiculous. Raw this past Monday night was live from Biloxi, Mississippi. The good, the bad, and the ugly here. Some random Raw observations. The ugly was the rating this week. Raw got a 2.7. which is about 3.5 million viewers, their lowest audience since December of last year. And what do you chalk it up to? Do you chalk it up to the new fall TV season? Do you chalk it up to Monday Night Football? I didn't watch the football game, but apparently that game turned into a blowout. So as far as I'm concerned, football's not a good excuse this week. Do you blame it on John Cena? Do people want to see John Cena back? Or is it their awful emasculation of every single babyface on the roster? I know they're trying to tell a story. They've got some long-term plan in mind here, but it can't help every single week when you go on TV and Brian's getting screwed every single week and Big Show is crying and Ziggler's getting beat and this guy's getting beat and Stephanie is standing up in front of AJ Lee and basically making her look like a little bitch when she's supposed to be the toughest diva on the roster. You know, at some point that catches up with you. And people are watching the show going, I can't get behind any of these people. These people suck. These people have no balls. They've been neutered. And maybe they start tuning out. Maybe it's a combination of all those things. I don't know. But not a good number. They're partnering with the Susan G. Komen Foundation, again, all month, to celebrate breast cancer awareness, which means the pink ring rope is back. And this time, everybody except Randy Orton and The Shield, apparently, are required to wear pink versions of their t-shirt. And that's good, because the thought of The Shield walking through the crowd wearing pink flak jackets is actually kind of disturbing. I do want to step on my soapbox here for a little bit. Actually, I do that every week. The CEO of Susan G. Komen, up until about 4 months ago, was this woman named Nancy Brinker. The group is named after Brinker's sister, Susan, who died of breast cancer something like 30 years ago. It's been a while. Do you know how much Brinker was taking home in salary before she was forced out due to pressure? Okay, she left her post back in June because everybody in the world was coming down on her saying, you got to get this woman out of there. Okay, so finally she bowed out. They have a new CEO now. But do you know how much she was making before that? $684,000 a year. Almost $700,000, and they're a nonprofit. Why the hell was this woman making so much money? Komen is not doing all that well these days. Where the hell are they getting the money to pay this woman? And what was she doing that was so important that she had to be making that much? They finally got rid of her. They replaced her with somebody else who they claim makes much less than this other woman was making before. But they won't say how much that is, interestingly enough. And Brinker is still with Susan G. Komen, just not the CEO. So who knows how much she's making now either. I think what WWE does is great. It's noble. It's good PR, obviously. But, man, you know, the more I read up on Komen, and I knew things about Komen before because, unfortunately, I think as probably many of you listening, you know somebody, family member, friend, maybe yourself, has dealt with cancer before, breast cancer in some cases. So, unfortunately, I'm more aware of this stuff than perhaps I'd like to be. But the more you read up on Komen, the more I wonder why anybody would give one red cent to that group. You could say the same thing about a lot of cancer charities. Unfortunately, they're hardly the only ones. But you really have to do your homework and pick and choose who you donate to, because a lot of the money that people give for cancer research ends up going either into other people's pockets or it goes towards fundraising, which I think a lot of people don't realize. There is no reason the CEO of a cancer charity, especially one that's not doing well, should be making almost $700,000. I read a stat that said what this woman was making was more than what the head of the Red Cross currently makes, and Komen is about one-tenth the size of the Red Cross. I mean, that's just wrong. So, seriously, if anybody wants to give to cancer charities that might actually make a difference, if you know of any good ones and you want to share with the rest of us, email me and I'd be more than happy to do my part and mention them on the show next week. Okay, send me an email to solemnmonster@gmail.com with any that you have dealt with, that you donate to, that are on the up and up. And if you're going to donate, at least you'll know that your money is actually going towards a good cause and not going to fatten other people's wallets. CM Punk opened the show. He pinned Big E Langston in the opening contest. Good to see Big E back on TV. We haven't seen him in a while. He's kind of in a state of limbo right now. His feud with Ziggler never really had a conclusion, and his relationship with AJ is seemingly over, which is too bad. What a lame way to break them up. I like the two of them together. So Punk beat him with the GTS. The story here is that heading into his match with Ryback at Battleground, he can, in fact, get a bigger man up on his shoulders and put them to sleep. So this was fine. Kofi Kingston pinned Fandango with the Trouble in Paradise. At least there was no walkout. That's a plus. On commentary, JBL said Fandango is like Usher crossed with Randy Couture. What an insult to Randy Couture. I don't know what JBL's obsession is with Couture, by the way, but he name drops him at least once a week on TV. So out comes the Wyatt family. Kofi arms himself in the ring with a steel chair to protect himself, but no reason to. Bray just sat in his rocking chair. He said a few words, follow the buzzards, and that was that. This was their way of setting up a match between the two of these guys on pay-per-view, which is to say, this is a poor way of setting up a pay-per-view match that anybody will actually care about. So finally, after weeks of anticipation, it was time for the debut of Los Matadores, Primo and Epico doing a bullfighting gimmick. Their names are now Diego and Fernando. And with them, as I mentioned previously on the show, was a mini mascot named El Torito, which in Spanish means little bull, which actually sounds like an Indian name when you say it. Or maybe I'm just thinking of Sitting Bull. He looked exactly like Mini Mantar. I just got done talking about Mantar in last week's show, this random gimmick from 1995, and how he used to moo at his opponents like a cow. And then I turn on Raw Monday night, and I see a miniature version of him, and I just laugh my ass off. Nobody bothered cluing Michael Cole in, unfortunately, about the comparison. At one point, he said El Torito's costume reminded him not of Mantar, which would be the correct answer, but rather Giant Gonzalez. Except that he looked nothing like the Giant Gonzalez. So I don't know what the hell Michael Cole was talking about. Anyway, it's Mascarita Dorada from Mexico. He signed with WWE. He was sent to developmental, I believe, back in April. And if you watch this little guy's stuff on YouTube, he is incredible to watch. I posted a highlight video on my Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/Solomonster, it's probably still up there. You can scroll down and find it. I watch this guy, and it reminds me of Rey Mysterio when Rey was younger. They had this whole elaborate entrance that included El Torito bouncing off the ropes like a little Mexican jumping bean. He was bouncing off the ropes, over the ropes, from rope to rope. I was exhausted just watching him. Mark my words, this guy is going to end up being the real star of this group before all is said and done. That's the bad news, long term, for Diego and Fernando. The good news is they're finally back on TV. I don't know how long they were gone for. It was months and months of just them probably wrestling at Fan Access and house shows and not much else. So at least now they're back on TV. They have, you know, at least on week one, I thought it was a fun gimmick, which means there's going to be a spot on these shows for them for the foreseeable future. That's the good news. They had a match with 3MB. I was disappointed not to hear a flying jalapeno reference from anybody on commentary like Bobby Heenan used to always do when Tito Santana would throw his flying forearm. The Matadors won with a double Samoan drop. I thought this was a fun debut. It's a completely ridiculous gimmick, I admit. But I kind of feel the same way about it that I did when Brodus Clay first came back. And everybody was all upset. Oh my God, how could they do this to Brodus? And if you remember, I said, hey, give it a chance. This could actually work. This guy could sell a ton of merchandise. If they push him the right way, you know, when you piss him off, he gets all angry. He's got like a mean streak. If they play their cards right, this guy could be big. And then they fucked it up. But I thought this was fun. I mean, I really don't have anything to complain about. I think between the music and the gimmick, it felt like something straight out of the 1980s. But I thought it was fun. If all they plan on doing, though, I have to say this, is using El Torito in a tiny bull costume, they're out of their frickin' minds. Okay, they need to bring in other mini wrestlers for him to feud with. Remember when Raw moved to 3 hours and I pitched an idea for the return of a minis division? It's time to make that happen. They now have their star of the division. They already have him. It'd be a nice way, I think, to just break up the monotony of the show every single week. Because nothing else really feels different. It's 3 hours of the same stuff every week. The Divas get their 2 minutes. They don't have a cruiserweight division or anything special like that. The minis, at least, would be a welcome change of pace, I think, for a few minutes each week. And if that means we have one less Fandango versus Santino match, then fine by me. As a matter of fact, Fandango and Santino were part of a match on NXT that was actually a lot of fun. I'd rather keep that match on NXT and put stuff like this on Raw. Triple H and Stephanie came out to introduce the Rhodes family. They said their safety was insured, just like it is for every other WWE superstar. They had nothing to worry about, so come on down to the ring. This turned out to be false. This was a lie, as it would turn out. We had Dusty, Cody, and Goldust out there. Goldust looked completely ridiculous, wearing a suit with his gold face paint on. Just do one or the other. Don't do both. You know, Hunter ended up calling him Dustin for half the promo anyway. You're trying to make this a serious angle that people could really get into. Just let him come out there without the damn face paint. Triple H and Stephanie said they were going to offer Dustin and Cody their jobs back, provided that they can beat Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns at Battleground in what I assume is a non-title match. I guess it really wouldn't make much sense to have two unemployed guys wrestling a sanctioned championship match. However, if Cody and Dustin lose, this is the other provision of the match here, then they will never again work for WWE, and their father, who they said trains the younger stars now in NXT, he'll lose his job as well. So they left the Rhodes family in the ring. Shield came out to attack. They laid out all three of them. Cody laid out with a triple powerbomb. I thought this was a great segment. I really liked this. And I have to say, even though the pay-per-view this weekend just feels completely missable and completely unimportant, if I had to pick one match on this pay-per-view that I'm looking forward to the most, it's not Daniel Bryan or Randy Orton. It's not Del Rio and RVD. It's this match. It's the Rhodes family against the Shield. The Shield always has good matches, and now you actually have a good story behind it. I'm into the story. I like the fact they brought Goldust back. I'm happy for him. I think he deserves another shot. One last run. Looks like he's in good shape. We get to see him and his brother work in an angle for the first time, which I don't think we've seen before. They had that one spot, I guess, in the Royal Rumble, but that was it. So I'm into this. This is the one match, if I had to pick one, that I'm looking forward to the most at the pay-per-view. And I thought this segment was great. Dusty Rhodes was really good, much better than he was in that promo a few weeks ago, which was also very good, but he kind of stumbled over his words a little bit. Not here. He had less to say. He made the most of it. The crowd ate it up, and believe me, they were not eating much of anything all night. The crowd in Biloxi sucked. There's really no other way to put it. And I had one listener who lives there. He actually attended the show. He was in the building. He wrote in to say the same thing. So that's coming from somebody who was actually there. Even in the building, the crowd did not come across well at all. Stephanie, I think, also deserves credit. She was really good in this segment. Because Dusty is pretty much in control of his own promos when he's out there, not that he's out there very often, but when he is, he doesn't work off a script. There was apparently a moment in this segment where I guess Dusty put his hand up to kind of shut Stephanie down. I think Dusty was face-to-face with Triple H. Stephanie was kind of off to the side in between them. She's running her mouth, and Dusty just put his hand up, and Stephanie swatted his hand away. Evidently, Stephanie had no idea that he was going to do that and was ticked off about it after the fact backstage. I thought that part of the segment made it so great. It was nice to see a babyface with a set of balls shut down the heel like that, but I guess we can't have that now, can we? R-Truth pinned Curtis Axel after CM Punk's music hit. It distracted Axel, which allowed Truth to lay him out. Heyman smirked at ringside like he knew Punk had just gotten one over on him. Mind games. Mind games. There was a funny moment, though. R-Truth came out. He did his entrance. You know, what's up, what's up. So JBL is shouting what's up over and over and over again. He's getting into the music. He's like R-Truth's biggest fan. He's like an R-Truth groupie, this guy is. And Jerry Lawler says, if you guys ever release an album together, it won't be released, it will escape. And I have to admit, I thought that line was great. That was very clever. Lawler is not quite what he used to be. I think that goes without saying, but that was actually a really good line. Every now and then, there'll be a nice gem from the King, and that was one of them. Brie Bella pinned Alicia Fox with the X Factor earlier. They showed us a lovely video package of Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella together in celebration of their big engagement. And as I said on Twitter, it's really too bad, you know, that Brie and Alicia here were adversaries. After all, Alicia was the wedding planner for Edge and Vicky when they got married. Nobody seems to bring that up anymore. Bellas are total baby faces now. No ambiguity about it. So the classic John Morrison turn, where one week they just show up on TV and they're baby faces without any real explanation. AJ Lee and Tamina, her new heavy, were watching on a monitor backstage. Divas stopwatch had this at 3 minutes 19 seconds, which is actually longer than usual, much longer. Backstage, Paul Heyman told Curtis Axel that he was going to propose to Ryback on the show. Elsewhere, Renee Young interviewed The Big Show, who was clad in his nice-looking suit. He said he considers himself to be a good person. He's being forced against his will to do bad things. He said he knocked out Dusty Rhodes, a Hall of Famer, and now Dusty is back in the building and he can't even look him in the eye. And suddenly the Big Show's eyes grew big and wide, and he said he's not going to take it anymore. Tonight, he was going to knock Triple H the fuck out. And unfortunately, he didn't say fuck. He used a different word, but imagine how much bigger the crowd would have popped had he actually used the word fuck. As long as they don't turn the guy heel for the zillionth time, I think when he snaps, really snaps, not even what we saw on this show. I mean, he finally is able to get his hands on Triple H or The Shield or whoever. People are going to go nuts. I love this promo. I loved it. I thought Big Show was clearly channeling Captain Insano here from Happy Gilmore. This was the guy I saw on SmackDown all those weeks ago when I raved about his performance, when he just sat there the whole show and had to just watch all the babyfaces get their asses kicked. Big Show was awesome. Until Stephanie McMahon implied that he had a tiny penis and then he cried. Again. Yes, he never did find Triple H. Instead, he called the cops on Big Show. Stephanie saved him, although not before insulting his manhood or lack thereof. So I did love this segment up until that point. Paul Heyman came out to propose to Ryback. But first, I would like to share with you, if I may, yet another gem of a poll from the WWE app. This one asked, what would you do if Paul Heyman was about to propose to you? A, find some walrus repellent. B, swoon and then faint with glee. Or C, call AJ Lee. See, I look at this and I think to myself, this is a trick question. The correct answer is, smack the person who writes these stupid, dumbass poll questions. God, can you possibly come up with worse Let me write the polls. I'll do it for free. I swear, you don't even have to charge me. Volunteer. I will volunteer for the job. I can come up with better poll questions than this. Please. I didn't like this segment. I thought it was a rare misfire when it comes to Heyman and Punk segments. They dragged this thing out forever. I'm sure it had something to do with it being at the top of the hour and the ratings and all that, but this just would not end. Heyman is out there. The punchline is he's proposing gay marriage, basically, to Ryback, or so we're supposed to think, which I'm sure is illegal in the state of Mississippi. Actually, you know what? I'll give them some credit now that I think about it for doing this segment there, because they probably figured it would make for good heat being in Mississippi and doing this gay marriage proposal. I don't think it worked, but if that was the idea, I could actually understand that. It'd be like having a character go out on TV and protest about gun control at a show somewhere in Texas, you know? Heyman got down on one knee and asked Ryback to be a Paul Heyman guy. Punk's music hit. He came out of the crowd and pretended to fall and injure his knee. And after some initial hesitation, Paul Heyman fell for it. Punk whacked him in the leg with a kendo stick. Then he whacked Ryback and he gave Curtis Axel a GTS for good measure. Has there ever been a more ineptly booked Intercontinental Champion than Curtis Axel? I think Wade Barrett comes pretty close. He was the last guy or one of the last guys to hold the title. But boy, I think the well runs dry after that. I can't think of too many guys that have had that belt for any real length of time who have been booked worse than this guy. We were informed that WWE Hall of Famer Trish Stratus and her husband Ron, who was the biggest heel in Madison Square Garden since superstar Billy Graham back in the day, when Trish mentioned his name during her Hall of Fame speech, they welcomed their first son Maximus into the world on Monday. JBL said, with a name like Maximus, I hope that kid can fight. And he'll be all right. You know, we'll just call him Max. That's all. He'll be fine. Shield beat Ziggler and the Usos in a six-man tag. Can't go wrong with the Shield six-man. Ziggler was way more over than he had any right to be, considering his level of push of late. And he seemed to be motivated by the crowd reaction. I mean, people were cheering for him like he was a main event level guy. And he was smiling. He was enjoying it. And just as he was really getting going, Roman Reigns speared him into the next galaxy and got the pin. Main event was Antonio Cesaro versus Santino Marella. Let me repeat that for you. The main event of Monday Night Raw was Antonio Cesaro and Santino Marella. They are playing the giant swing up as a really big deal in all of Cesaro's matches now. Santino pinned him with some move. I don't even know what the hell it was. It wasn't a roll-up. He just kind of fell on top of Cesaro and pinned him. This sucked. Cesaro deserves better. He just does. He just deserves better than this. The first time was fine. You know, I thought the match that he and Santino had when Santino came back a few weeks ago, I thought that was fun. That was a fun match. The crowd was into it. They were having fun. I didn't have a problem with Santino winning that first match. Here, I have a huge problem with Santino winning. You know, maybe they're going to do a losing streak angle with Cesaro. We all know how that just works wonders for people's careers when they do losing streak angles. I read that maybe they're playing up the giant swing as a way to turn him babyface. Good! I hope they do. I hope that is the plan. Anything that results in a meaningful role for this guy on the show every week is fine by me. Losing to Santino is not meaningful. It's a waste. So the final segment was Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan. They had a face-off. They yacked back and forth for a few minutes. And Bryan attacked Orton. Orton made a comment, I think, about Brie Bella. So they brawled. Orton got the best of it. Orton beat the crap out of Bryan. He was, you know, threw him out of the ring. All of a sudden, here comes Brie Bella in the main event segment here on Raw. And she's yelling at Randy Orton, stop it, stop it. She did as well as she can do. She's not a master thespian. She's really not a good actress. I've seen other women do a lot better. I mean, hell, remember that segment on Raw when Eve Torres went crazy? She had her little crush or whatever the hell it was on John Cena. And Cena was, like, trying to console her in the ring, and she latched on to Cena, and Cena was like, you know, get the hell off me. And Eve is just in the ring crying. Her mascara's all smeared. Even that I would consider that to be a good acting performance. You know, they've had divas that are actually really good at that. Brie Bella, not so much. She's just kind of wooden. And Bryan is getting killed, and she's just, you know, stop it, stop it, stop it. The crowd could not care any less. The crowd was more interested in chanting things at Brie. I can't say I blame him. Orton laid Bryan out with a draping DDT off the apron and gave him an RKO on the announce table. And he stood over Bryan's dead body, and that's how Raw went off the air. So there you go. I read in this week's Observer newsletter that there is an idea on the table for WrestleMania next year that would have Randy Orton and CM Punk in the WWE Championship match. I guess it would be a rematch of WrestleMania 27 when they went one-on-one. And I guess if they do that, that would leave Daniel Bryan to wrestle Triple H, unless they want to do a Bryan-John Cena rematch from SummerSlam. But I feel like without the title on the line, it would just seem kind of empty if you did that match without the belt. I'd be okay with them doing Bryan versus Triple H, which I predicted at the beginning of all this that it's inevitable you're going to get a Bryan-Triple H match. And I figured it would be Triple H probably a month or two after SummerSlam, just like he did with Punk, beating Bryan. I'm actually kind of shocked they haven't gotten ahead of themselves and already done the match. But to see Bryan and Triple H at WrestleMania, if they wanted to do it, I'd be okay with that, provided that after all the insults and all the screw jobs, they have Daniel Bryan tap him out or knock him out with the running knee. That is the only outcome they could do if they do that match. Any other outcome is the wrong outcome. So if you do that, that leaves you to do Punk vs. Orton for the title and John Cena perhaps against The Undertaker. That's what I would do. And then if they get Rock back, if Rock commits to doing WrestleMania, which apparently he hasn't yet, they could do The Rock and Brock Lesnar, which was the original idea. Now, if Rock's not wrestling, Brock's the odd man out, and for the money that they pay him, believe me, Brock Lesnar is not going to be the odd man out. But they have some intriguing possibilities there. You know, Cena representing Vince McMahon against Orton or Triple H, I have zero interest in. Absolutely zero interest in seeing John Cena, Randy Orton, John Cena, Triple H. Been there, done that, don't need to see it. The other matches, though, I'd be okay with that. They actually are intriguing to me. NXT this week from Full Sail University. We'll zip through this. I enjoyed NXT a lot this week. This was a fun 45 minutes. And the best thing on the entire show probably was the opening match, which was Emma teaming with Santino Marella against Summer Rae and Fandango. So they had some main roster guys on NXT this week. Renee Young was also back on commentary with the fired Tony Dawson and Alex Riley. When they do these NXT tapings, I think they tape about four shows in one night. So I assume Tony Dawson got shit canned probably right after the taping. So he'll probably still pop up on TV one or two more times. And when they do the next batch, we'll have a different announce team. This was a total comedy match. Absolutely nothing serious about it. But the crowd loved it, and I agree with them. I watched it, and I thought, this is a fun match. And within the first 5 minutes of the match, for those of you who don't think the chant has jumped the shark, the fans were chanting, this is awesome. And they hadn't done anything yet. Just a bunch of comedy stuff. And they're chanting, this is awesome. There were two things here that I thought were actually very entertaining. They had this high-five exchange between Santino and Emma. So Santino would tag Emma. Actually, he wouldn't tag Emma. He would essentially give her a high-five, but the referee said, okay, that's a tag. And he would be like, no, I didn't tag her. So Fandango would leave. Santino would tag back in. Fandango came back in. This went on and on and on. High-five. Referee says it's a tag. No, it's not. Over and over. Finally, Fandango snaps. He just starts screaming. He says, stop high-fiving! Just the way he said it, I thought was actually really funny. Later on, Fandango had Santino down. He went up top for the high leg drop off the top, only Santino rolled away. He rolled all the way across to the other side of the ring, so Fandango had to jump down, go to the other corner, climb up to the top. Santino did the same thing, rolled all the way to the opposite corner. This went on about three or four different times. So you got to watch the match, I guess, to appreciate it. This was comedy done right. This was comedy on the developmental show. Maybe if this were in the middle of a three-hour Raw, I wouldn't have had such tolerance for it. And maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe when they do shit like this sometimes on Raw, the show is so freaking long. By the middle of Raw, by the last third of the show, I am so done. I'm like, please, can we get to the main event already? That when they put matches like this on the main show, I don't want to see it. Because it's just filler, and I don't have any patience for it. But on a show like this, it worked. I thought everybody played their role great. It was a lot of fun. And in the end, Santino beat Fandango with the Cobra. Luke Harper beat Cassius Ohno with a vicious lariat clothesline. Cassius Ohno, back on TV here, does appear to be in better physical shape than he was when we last saw him 4 months ago. I'm fine with him losing here because my guess is that he'll have to eat shit for a while before they start pushing him again. But at least he's back. Enzo Amore and Big Cass, Colin Cassidy. There was an interview backstage. Colin Cassidy actually handled most of the talking this time, whereas Enzo normally does. Enzo was just kind of in the background as comedy fodder while Big Cass spoke. I like these guys. I would not have said that 2 months ago. I was not the biggest fan of this act, but they've won me over. I actually am a fan of what these guys are doing, so hopefully they keep it up. We got a vignette for Mojo Rawley, this jacked-up-looking dude whose gimmick is all about the word hype. He says the word hype all the time. He says, to be hype, you gotta stay hype. And for his sake, let's hope he lives up to the hype. I'm skeptical. The Ascension beat Corey Graves and Adrian Neville to win the NXT Tag Team titles. This was a god-awful, boring match. I'm sorry. If there's any Corey Graves fans out there, Adrian Neville, Pac, whatever you want to call him, I know he's very exciting in the ring. Maybe one of the best talents, not just in the company, but anywhere in the world. That's why they brought him in. And the Ascension gimmick, I'm kind of a fan of it. This just didn't work. This was boring. It was slow. It was plotting. If you love your rest holds, you'll love this match. This will be your match of the year. I just couldn't get into it. But in the end, the Ascension won. They won the tag team titles. They're the new champs. And I got nothing else to say about it. This just was not my favorite segment. Next week, we were told that Rob Van Dam is coming to NXT. No word on who he faces. And I have not read the spoilers, so I don't know. But he will be here on the show next week. Finally, we have the Bo Dallas Invitational. Bo Dallas, the NXT champion, comes out. Cuts a very shaky promo, I would say. Not his forte. But he invites the first person out. And remember, if they can beat him, he will give them a title shot in 2 weeks on NXT. So the first guy out is some skinny jabroni that we've never seen before and probably never will again. But for one night, the dude was a star. Because you see, the people in that NXT arena hate Bo Dallas. So much so that they gave this nameless man his own chant. They were shouting, let's go this guy, over and over and over again. That was his name for this match, this guy. And this guy, we'll call him, nearly rolled up Bo Dallas, got a near fall. This only pissed Bo Dallas off. He just murdered the guy with a spear. which is another one of those moves that I think is completely overused, but it's so much better than that belly-to-belly suplex he was using before. Hopefully that's a thing of the past. So he pinned him. Bo Dallas got back on the mic. He said he barely broke a sweat. He wanted some real competition. Out comes Leo Kruger. Then Antonio Cesaro's music hits. He comes out. The two of them brawl for a bit. They can't decide, you know, who's going to face the champion, so they just start fighting each other. They end up on the outside of the ring. All of a sudden, out comes El Local. El Local is the gimmick, the masked luchador gimmick played by Ricardo Rodriguez. Only this week, El Local looked a lot skinnier than he did a few weeks ago. And we could tell that under the mask, he now has a beard. Which, last I checked, Ricardo Rodriguez does not have a beard, let alone a red-colored beard. So Bo Dallas charges at him. He misses. El Local hits a Yakuza kick in the corner and pins the champion. And after the match, he takes off the mask. He reveals that it was, in fact, Sami Zayn under the mask. Place goes nuts. Bo Dallas looks mortified. He will defend his title against Sami Zayn in 2 weeks. The only thing that would have made this better is if they would have let him come out as El Generico instead of El Local. But close enough. He was in a mask with a cape. I think he had a cape. I don't know. This was fun. This was a fun show. Aside from that Ascension match, which might still be going on as I speak. I'm not quite sure. I just know I was bored to tears for much of it. Impact Wrestling. Before we get to the results of the show this week, just to give you a sense of how perilous things appear to be in terms of business and finances and all that. They've cut back significantly on their house shows to the point where there are no house shows in the month of October. It's almost like Ring of Honor, if you think about it, in terms of their touring schedule. The next house shows for TNA are not until the beginning of November. So the only things left this month are the TV tapings and Bound for Glory on October 20th. So, I don't know. It's tough, you know, because you have a lot of guys, I think, who work for TNA who I believe work on a per-appearance basis, so the fewer house shows they have, you would think in theory, the less money those guys are making, which sucks for them. You know, you feel bad for those guys. Impact on Thursday was taped the previous week from Little Rock, Arkansas. This was show number 2 from that night. Show opened with AJ Styles and Bully Ray in the ring. I thought Bully Ray in this segment was a master on the microphone. He just destroyed AJ Styles here. He told AJ to pray to whatever God he believes in because he's going to send him home without a contract to his miserable wife and his miserable kids. If I were standing in the ring across from somebody who referred to my wife as miserable, I'd pop him in the mouth. But AJ just stood there and took it. All he did was say that tonight, Joe is going to kill you, referring to Samoa Joe, and he walked off. Backstage, AJ confronted Dixie Carter. She did not want him in the building. She asked security to escort him out. He decided to leave on his own. You know, there's something seriously screwed up here with this storyline when you don't care about offering your top babyface a new contract and you kick him out of the building, but yet you freak out at the end of the show when the 60-year-old general manager quits the company and you beg him to stay. There's something wrong with that picture. Jeff Hardy and Matic beat Chris Sabin and Kenny King. Austin Aries provided commentary at ringside. It's a good match. They showed the cut on Kenny King's forehead. That cut from the match with Austin Aries the week before opened up again, so he had blood all over his face. Technically, the match with Aries happened earlier that same night since this was a tape show, so I guess no real surprise that the wound opened up. Hardy won with the Swanton on Kenny King after the match. Chris Sabin jumped the babyfaces because he's a heel now. He's beating them all up. Austin Aries made the save. He then announced that at Bound for Glory, it will be himself, Jeff Hardy, Manic, and Chris Sabin in a four-way for the X Division Championship. And then Jeff Hardy butted in and he said he wanted to do something that he's never done before. And so he made the four-way an Ultimate X match. Why do they even need Hulk Hogan as the GM if the wrestlers can just make their own matches anyway? Dixie should be happy to just let him leave. She doesn't need him. Magnus ran the gauntlet against Ego, the Extraordinary Gentlemen's organization. He beat Christopher Daniels in the first match. He beat Kazarian in the second. But Bobby Roode proved to be too much for him. Bobby Roode got him to tap out to the ankle lock, which possibly sets up a feud, maybe. for Kurt Angle once he comes back, being that Bobby Roode is now using his move. Honestly, I found this whole thing to be pretty boring. I don't know, you know, nothing in particular was, like, overly wrong with it, but just like the Ascension match on NXT, I couldn't get into it. I wanted to fast forward through part of it, only I couldn't. So I had to suffer through part of this match. After the match, Magnus lost his cool. Sting came out to calm him down, but Magnus would have none of it. He told Sting it's a results-driven business. Oh, really? Then how do you explain the last 12 years of Vince Russo's employment? Or Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff, for that matter. Sting agreed with him. He said that Ric Flair was the one who helped put him on the map. Magnus wanted to know, who's going to help me? Who's going to help put me on the map? And Sting said, I am. He challenged Magnus to a match at Bound for Glory. So I wonder if they'll do the heel turn with Magnus and have him beat AJ for the title at some point and be Dixie Carter's corporate champion like one of our listeners suggested last week. I could definitely see that, especially if AJ does not sign a new contract. Backstage, Chris Sabin told Velvet Sky he would not be accompanying her to the ring for her match with Brooke Tessmacher, who, by the way, is now just Brooke. Since Brooke Hogan is no longer around, she can once again assume the name Brooke. It's all for her now. So she's got her name back. Instead, Sabin said he was going to do some Tai Chi backstage. What a shitty boyfriend. Elsewhere, Daniels and Kazarian celebrated with Bobby Roode after his big win. This segment here I actually love. This was my favorite segment on the entire show. These guys are great together. They told Bobby Roode he was being inducted into the Hall of Fame next week, which caught Bobby Roode off guard. He was all excited. And then they said it's the Ego Hall of Fame. And Daniel said they were breaking ground soon on a physical building for it in Yucca Valley, California. I think it's where Frankie Kazarian actually lives. I think that's a real area. And in one of those great subtle little moments, Bobby Roode got all excited and he said, I love that town. So I thought that was great. So Kaz and Daniel sang a song. I didn't really recognize what the song was, but this was fun. This was great stuff. Brooke and Velvet never actually took place because Lady Tapa rumbled down to the ring. She's the niece of the Barbarian. She won Gut Check, if you remember, many months ago, back when Gut Check was still a thing before they finally put it out of its misery. She killed Velvet with a Samoan drop. She screamed a lot. She screamed some more. I don't know. I really wasn't all that impressed. You know, maybe it would have been more effective for me had I not seen that video of her on Gut Check, getting all sentimental and crying about what a big deal it would be for her to get a contract. You know, all of a sudden I'm supposed to think she's this big Amazonian monster. It's like when WWE brought in Awesome Kong, when they brought her in as Karma. They did such an awesome job making her feel like a big deal. This big, scary woman, the entrance, the theme music, everything about that whole character. And then, I guess as a way to write her off TV when she got pregnant, they had that one segment where she was surrounded by all the other divas in the ring, and she just broke down sobbing in the middle of the ring. And it's like, why would you do that? You know, she might come back. Why are you doing this? You just killed the gimmick. You just turned her into this sympathetic character. But, I don't know. With Lady Tapa, we'll give it some time. At least they have a new woman in the Knockouts division now. They need more. Because they lost Taryn Terrell for now. She got pregnant. For now, they lost Mickie James. Doesn't look like she's coming back anytime soon. Tara, they fired. Brooke never wrestled, thank God, but she's gone. But they need some more women. So I am in favor of bringing more Knockouts in. They aired another vignette for this new Ethan character that's coming in. Apparently this guy is supposed to be a douche. That's what I got out of this. He gets out of a sports car. He's walking into a dressing room. He throws his sports coat over some intern's head like they're a coat rack. Apparently the person playing Ethan will be Michael Huffer, better known to NXT fans as Derek Bateman, who WWE released earlier this year. Samoa Joe beat Bully Ray by DQ, like the gauntlet earlier. I just couldn't get into it. There was a ref bump. Joe went for the muscle buster. Bully used a chain on him. When Earl Hebner got up, he saw the chain. He DQ'd Bully Ray. After the match, Bully ripped up the padding outside the ring. He threatened to give Joe a pile driver on the pavement. when AJ Styles came out of the crowd to attack Bully. Security swarmed Styles, so he had to bail back into the crowd, and he celebrated with what appeared to be, I would say, about 8 TNA fans. This was kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you. You know, normally you would see people mobbing him, like any wrestler who runs into the crowd like that to celebrate, they would mob him. Makes for a great visual. It's like when James Storm beat Kurt Angle to win the TNA title. That was a great moment. He went into the crowd. He's, you know, spraying beer on everybody. People are going nuts. They're all swarming him. This was the opposite of that. I had heard that about 30% or so of the crowd left after the first taping last week, so perhaps that had something to do with it. Finally, it was time for Hulk Hogan's decision. This should have had its own special on ESPN. This was such a huge, monumental decision. Would Hogan stay or would he go? Out came heel Dixie. She asked Hulk if he was ready to take a ride on the Dixie train, which I thought was actually a great line. Hogan pondered this. He said after 35 years in the business, it was his dream to be part of a power couple. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. Him and Bischoff have been a couple for years and years and years. So he's already done the power couple thing. It was a great opportunity, he said, but for somebody else, not for him. And with that, Hogan said, I quit. And he left the ring. Dixie Carter was just incredulous. She followed him down the ramp. She latched onto his leg like a petulant little child. He tried to walk with her while she held on, then told her to get off his leg. And he walked out. Suddenly, Dixie changed her tune. She said, you can't quit because you're fired. You're fired. I never really wanted you anyway. And that was how Impact went off the air on Thursday night. This was every bit as bad as it sounded in the spoilers I read here on the show last week. Maybe worse when you consider that this very well could be the final appearance for Hulk Hogan in TNA. And off he walks, standing tall with his pride and his dignity, while TNA burns down around him. I still think Hogan is staying. He'll sign a new deal if he hasn't already. He'll probably pop up at Bound for Glory. If they were smart, they'd let him walk. But I keep reading that they want him back, you know, so badly. They're in negotiations. They're doing everything they can to try to keep him with the company. Good luck with that. This segment was just horrendous. Any true fan of TNA, and there are out there, there's a lot of TNA fans out there who are fiercely loyal to the product. Any true TNA fan who tries to defend this has their head in the clouds. Okay, the diehards who defend this company from every negative clip on YouTube, every negative comment on an internet message board. You know, I have to say, I almost respect them. I respect their tenacity, even as I cringe at their ignorance. You know, they're like Democrats or Republicans. Okay, take your pick. These guys who are so fiercely loyal to their own party. It doesn't matter whether the party is right or wrong. You just have to check your brain at the door and just stick up for the home team. Okay, even those fans cannot possibly watch a segment like this and think that it does TNA any favors. If you do, you're not a real fan. And like I said last week, that image of Dixie dry-humping Hulk's leg as he looks down at her like a spoiled little brat, that's your cover for the inevitable death of TNA book. Whenever that book gets written, and hopefully it won't be for many more years, but when that book gets written, that has to be the cover. Okay, I can't think of a better image. The perfect image for the death of TNA book. Right there. You saw it in living color on Thursday night. And speaking of Hogan, how can I do a show this weekend and not mention this? Hogan has already moved on to other endeavors, apparently. Hulk Hogan is a partner in a new venture called Hostamania. Yes, Hulk Hogan is going to be hosting his own web hosting service, apparently, with the Hulkamania name. He's lent his likeness to it. They've got Hogan in the logo. This thing is ready to go. Halloween Day, apparently, is they've got this countdown clock on Hostamania.com, counting down to what I believe is October 31st or somewhere around there, maybe November 1st. This is actually a real thing. This was a big story on TMZ. They launched with this one-minute commercial that was meant to get people talking, which it did, which was a picture of Hulk Hogan. Actually, a picture. It's a video of Hulk Hogan mocking Miley Cyrus's new music video, I guess. He's wearing a thong, with all of his other Hulkamania attire, sitting on a wrecking ball. Okay, that's the whole premise of the video. If you watch the video, it's an image you'll never be able to get out of your head, so I'm just warning you now. But you know what? At least Hulk Hogan is able to poke fun at himself and have some fun. I watched this video and I was horrified, don't get me wrong, but you know what? It's all in good fun. I thought it was kind of, you know, entertaining for what it was. And he's trying to get people to notice the new product. You know, he's launching this new service. He wants it to be a success. God only knows all the other things that Hogan has lent his likeness to. Not too many of them have worked out well. They've been documented right here on this podcast, whether it was Pasta Mania. Remember Pasta Mania at the Mall of America? How long did that last? There's a photo somewhere on the internet. I don't know how old this photo is, if it was in the last like 10 years or if it was right after Pasta Mania went out of business, which would have been, you know, 95, 96. There's a picture of the Pasta Mania awning from the you know, the restaurant in the mall in like the back alley somewhere of I don't know if it's the back alley of the mall or where the hell it was. Like this disgusting, rusted, rotting awning. Like looked like a nuclear explosion went off, and this was the only remnant left of Pasta Mania. And the Hulk Hogan grill that apparently was blowing up and nearly killing people and burning people's houses down. Hopefully Hostamania at least won't burn your house down. I don't know if I would trust it to host my website. But let me just read this. I have to read this. This is from the Hostamania website. This little excerpt here that they have. I'm actually going to try to read this in the Hulk Hogan voice just because, you know, whatever. It's my birthday this week and I want to act like an idiot. Enlighten me for a moment here. The headline is, Hostamania will be running wild soon. And this is the message they have. I beat the Iron Sheik and Andre the Giant in the ring, and now I'm taking my quest for glory to the internet, brother. Setting up a website has never been this easy, and low-quality hosting companies think they can run wild and overcharge you. Those days are over, dude. I'm stepping into the web hosting ring, and I'm getting ready to leg-drop the competition. I'm busy hulking up, getting ready, trading in the pythons for web servers. Sign up, say your prayers, take your vitamins, and I'll let you know once Hostamania is ready to run wild on you. Damn. Well, that killed my throat for the rest of the show. That was a bad idea. So yeah, Hostamania. It's coming at the end of the month. And good for Hulk Hogan. He's moved on from TNA. He's going to be hosting websites now and God knows what else. Got to make money somehow. So there you go. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can always email them to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can send audio questions as well in MP3 format. Preferably no more than 30 seconds. And please, please, please include your question in the body of your email. And anybody who sends in questions in general, please remember to include your name. Your name and where you're from. Some people forget to put their name. So it's very important that you include that. Before we get to the questions, I just have to mention this is from Miguel Colon, one of our listeners. I feel compelled to mention this here. I answered a question last week about Los Matadores, and I was asked about bullfighting. And I was talking about all that kind of stuff. And I mentioned, apparently, that Primo and Epico were either from Mexico or were Mexican. And I don't know why I said that, because I know better than that. And as Miguel pointed out, Primo and Epico are from Puerto Rico, not Mexico. Those are two very different places. So I just wanted to make that correction and apologize for that. I was incorrect. They are, in fact, from Puerto Rico. But my other point on bullfighting still stands. This comes from Brian. How do you see this administration angle unfolding? I have read that the idea is to eventually lead to a match at WrestleMania 30 for complete control, but what's the match going to be? I simply do not see it being Vince versus Triple H. But how about somebody representing Vince against him? As much as I would love to see it be Steve Austin, I just don't see him ever wrestling again. Plus, the recent release of JR definitely makes it less likely. Do you think possibly we could see Shawn Michaels against Triple H? Hunter has said he wants his last match to be against Shawn, so to me, having his last match be against the opponent that he's wanted at the 30th WrestleMania sounds like a good curtain call for the Cerebral Assassin. Then again, I also believe Shawn Michaels is also never going to wrestle again. Well, the idea is, or I should say the idea was, when they started the angle, to have a surrogate represent Vince in a match against Triple H for control of the company. Not unlike the Battle of the Billionaires thing at WrestleMania 23, where Vince had Umaga representing him against Bobby Lashley. They definitely wanted Steve Austin for the role, but that appears to be out. I mentioned weeks ago on the Sound Off the possibility of it being The Rock instead, but he may not be wrestling next year, so that looks unlikely. Shawn Michaels is an interesting choice. I really hadn't thought about that. But, you know, like you, I just don't see him wrestling again. It's been, what, 4 years now? Shawn Michaels now has been out about as long as he was when he had that layoff with the back injury from 98 to 2002. So it almost doesn't feel like it, but he's actually been out for a significant amount of time. He's getting closer to, you know, 50 years old, not getting any younger. He's doing his thing with his outdoor channel show with Keith Mark. They're hunting moose and deer and elk and whatever the hell else it is they kill. So he's doing his own thing. I don't get the impression that Shawn is itching to come back, and I think he wants to uphold the stipulation. It'd be nice for a change, I think, to see a guy actually live up to a retirement stipulation in a match. You know, I could see Undertaker, perhaps, representing the company. I mean, he is the phenom of WWE. But I don't want to see that match for the fourth time at WrestleMania. I have absolutely no interest in seeing Triple H versus Undertaker Part 4. Less than zero interest. There's no reason to do that match for a fourth time at WrestleMania. So, Brian, what about Daniel Bryan? Bryan would make no sense unless the idea is that Vince has finally been convinced that Daniel Bryan is not just a little goat-faced troll. And then he goes on to tap out Triple H at WrestleMania, which is the idea that I mentioned earlier in the show. That'd be the only way it would make sense. But is it going to happen? I don't know. Cena? Ugh, I have no interest in that. So personally, I'd love for it to be The Rock. Of the choices that we're talking about here, you know, it's not going to be Austin. I don't think Shawn's coming out of retirement. I'd rather Undertaker do something else and Cena do something else. Of the big names, why not The Rock? If you're going to do a match where you need a surrogate to represent the company. I know John Cena is the face of the company, but I don't know. Personally, I'd rather see The Rock. You can make for some entertaining TV, assuming they can even get Rock on TV more than twice during the build-up to WrestleMania. I just love all the different possibilities that there are for the main event matches this year. There's a million different directions they can go in. I haven't even mentioned Big Show. Big Show's being pushed at the top of the card right now. I know at some point I'm almost positive he'll have a match with Randy Orton and or Triple H. Are they going to blow off the Big Show as a main eventer before WrestleMania season? They might, but if he's still swimming at the top, then you've got to fit Big Show in there somewhere. Lots of possibilities. This comes from Rajan. I heard you once say that Jeff Jarrett burned his bridge with Vince McMahon. Can you please explain why? When Jarrett left WWE in 1999, he basically held them hostage over money. Jim Ross was the head of talent relations at the time. He allowed Jeff Jarrett's contract to expire while he was still the Intercontinental Champion, and he was scheduled to lose the title to China in a match at the No Mercy pay-per-views, that Good Housekeeping match. Well, Jarrett said that he would gladly drop the title to her so long as Vince paid him $300,000. Which Jarrett claimed in later interviews was money that was still owed to him. But again, who knows? That's his claim. It would make sense just because really why the hell would Vince McMahon, you know, give away 300 grand to Jeff Jarrett just because he asked for it? Now, it wasn't like he was in the main event of the show, but he put them in a tough position. It wasn't the main event, but that match with China probably was one of the top two or three promoted matches on that show. Plus, you have to keep in mind, even though WWE was kicking ass at the time, and WCW was already dying a slow, agonizing death, you still had a Monday Night War going on. You know, both of those companies were still in competition with each other. It would have been a huge black eye for WWE to have Jarrett not job to China and then show up on Nitro the next night with the Intercontinental belt. So this all went down the night of the show. They paid him, he dropped the belt, and he has not been back since. And in fact, he knew he burned that bridge and was not going to be taken back once WCW went out of business, which is what led to the formation of TNA. It was Jeff and his father, Jerry, who founded the company in 2002 when it was NWA TNA. Had Jarrett left WWE on better terms, there very likely never would have been a TNA in the first place. some promoter somewhere would have started up a new company, but it probably would not have been TNA. Adam writes in, you recently mentioned Jerry Lawler appeared on the Steve Austin show, and I had to listen to both parts of the interview. I became completely engrossed in the whole Andy Kaufman feud and headed to my trusty laptop to take in some of those matches. Kaufman had nuclear heat and really did go out of his way to make each match in the feud memorable. After watching it, though, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Andy Kaufman is not in the WWE Hall of Fame. I know Andy never performed in WWE, but he is undoubtedly the celebrity who contributed the most to his time in pro wrestling and really gave it his all, whether he was in the ring, cutting promos, or whatever, especially in contrast to current Hall of Fame members like Drew Carey and Bob Uecker. Do you feel, even though Andy Kaufman never performed in WWE, that he should be recognized for his contributions and inducted into the Hall of Fame? Absolutely. Absolutely. If you have a celebrity wing to any pro wrestling Hall of Fame, and really there's only one that I know of, then, you know, how can you not have Andy Kaufman in there? It just doesn't make sense. The stuff Kaufman was doing in Memphis was ahead of its time. Just like Jerry Lawler said in that interview, and I would recommend that you listen to that interview because it was actually quite good. The stuff that they were doing then, if you had a star now as big as Andy was back then, would totally work. It wouldn't seem outdated or old-fashioned at all. You could definitely make money doing an angle like Kaufman did with Lawler back in the 80s. And Lawler said it, Andy helped put him on the map. I think Andy would have been the perfect person to induct Lawler into the Hall of Fame were he still alive. And likewise for Andy, to have Jerry induct him. If they ever do induct him, I think there's a chance they might. Just because they haven't done it yet doesn't mean it won't happen. Jerry Lawler has to be the person to do the induction. I think the problem, though, and maybe this is why it hasn't happened, it may be who owns the rights to all that Memphis footage with Kaufman. I've never seen WWE use any of it, which tells me they don't own it. And if they don't own any of the wrestling footage involving him, that makes it awfully difficult to put together an induction video for the guy and then, you know, put a DVD out with him on it. So that may have something to do with it. There was a documentary that was released on Andy's life and his time in wrestling from his girlfriend at the time of his death. It was called I'm From Hollywood. I watched it a whole bunch of times in the late 90s when it would air on Comedy Central. I think it was made in the 80s. After he died, but they would air it constantly in the late 90s. I think it was put out on DVD, if I'm not mistaken. If WWE could at least get the rights to that documentary, there's enough footage in there. They could probably use clips from that because, like I said, ton of Memphis stuff in that documentary. But again, I don't know who owns what and what, you know, legal issues may be involved in all that. Erica Ensley from Akron, Ohio. I've been listening to your show for about 2 years now, and I love it. Earlier this year, I sent in a shout-out for my 18th birthday, and you, Brian Blade, and Noah Marks sang happy birthday to me. I wanted to start off by saying thanks for that. Well, that's funny, because after we sang that to you, I felt like we should be the ones apologizing to you, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. My question is, with all the stiff competition Raw has during football season, do you think WWE would ever consider switching nights? Also, many think Friday is a bad day for SmackDown, or any show for that matter, because most people are usually out and don't watch TV that night. Where do you stand on that issue? P.S. I'm excited because I might have a chance to meet Dolph Ziggler. He's an alum of my college and is coming to our homecoming. Who was the first wrestler you ever met? I'm pretty sure the first wrestler I ever met was Shawn Michaels. I've actually met him 3 times, and I even interviewed him once for this show. Do I think they would move Raw? Well, let's see. I mean, Raw's been on the air for 20 years now, right? Going on 21. I think if they were going to move the show, they probably would have done it by now. And actually, that reminds me. I remember reading at the time, this would have been during the Monday Night Wars, that ABC, I mean, Monday Night Football now is on ESPN. Back in the day, it was on ABC. And I remember reading that ABC had supposedly offered WWE just millions of dollars to move Raw to Tuesdays because wrestling was so hot at the time it was eating into the football audience. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but I remember reading about it at the time. Is Friday a bad day for SmackDown? Not as bad as you would think. I mean, they have weeks where they pull 3 million viewers, which is actually very good. Friday is traditionally a bad night for TV. And yes, I do think that if they move SmackDown back to Thursdays, which was its original day, that the show would probably do a little bit better, but, you know, not by much. I mean, if they get 3 million viewers now on a good week, then they move to Thursdays, what are they going to get? Probably not even 3.5. So, I mean, the difference at this point is probably negligible. Wrestling, you know, just isn't as hot anyway as it used to be, so you're not going to get such a huge audience for what people know is the second-rate show behind Raw. No offense to all the SmackDown fans out there. So, you know, Raw did 3.5 million viewers this week, which for Raw is a terrible number, but they did 3.5 million. And SmackDown these days is not going to beat Raw. I don't care what day of the week it airs. It's just not going to happen. So they never should have changed to Fridays to begin with. When they went to Sci-Fi, I don't understand why they didn't push for that. I'm sure there was a reason in closed-door meetings. What that reason is, I to this day still can't figure it out. Chad writes in, do you think WWE, if they ever get their network off the ground, that they will ever produce an ESPN 30 for 30 type documentary on Chris Benoit's life and tragedy? I feel they should do it because they can't ignore this piece of history forever and continue to bury their heads in the sand. The NFL acknowledges O.J. Simpson is a great football player without glamorizing his alleged indiscretions. Well, true, but here's the big difference. Nobody has ever accused the NFL of being culpable or responsible for O.J. allegedly killing two human beings. Okay, they didn't call it roid rage from playing football. You didn't have NFL players and NFL executives go on television and lie about how O.J. never failed a drug test before, when in the case of Benoit, that's exactly what happened. Everybody blamed WWE, they blame wrestling, and I don't agree with that. I think they got beat up unfairly because of it. I mean, WWE didn't do themselves any favors by sending people like Ken Kennedy out there to go on the Fox News Channel and outright lie about his own use of performance-enhancing drugs, which came back to bite him on the ass later that same year. In fact, it was only a few months later, which resulted in him losing out on the biggest storyline payoff of his entire career. It wasn't WWE's fault that he murdered his wife and kid, but they got sucked into that whole thing in a way that, you know, the NFL didn't during the OJ trial, probably because OJ wasn't playing football at the time. He had long since retired. Benoit was still an active performer for them at the time of his death. He probably would have won a championship that weekend had he not died. Probably would have beaten CM Punk to win the ECW title. So should they do a documentary like that? If the idea is to have a real news division, then sure, why not? But I don't think that the idea is to have a serious news division as part of this WWE network. I'd rather see an ESPN or a 60 Minutes do something like that than WWE. But unfortunately, you know, most media people these days don't bother getting their facts straight, especially when it comes to pro wrestling. I guess because they don't see it as a serious topic, so they don't bother doing any research. They feel it's beneath them. I wanted to just pull my hair out over some of the coverage during the Benoit stuff, especially the cable news channels. They are the bottom of the barrel, dirt worst. It's not about accuracy with them. It's about who can break news first and then bloviate about it for days on end. Because the longer you talk about a sensational story, like the Benoit murders, right, the higher your ratings are going to be. Cable news has more in common with pro wrestling than they'd like to admit. Believe me when I say that. I mean, Nancy Grace. Remember her? How ironic. A woman with the name Grace who has none. History has been made here! This week in wrestling history, 24 years ago this week, on October 2nd, 1989, Bobby Heenan's Brainbusters, the team of Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, whom we interviewed as part of Sound Off 212 in Miami, a huge honor for me. They lost the WWF tag team titles back to Demolition at a TV taping in Wheeling, West Virginia. Blanchard was the illegal man in the ring at the time when Axe and Smash hit their finisher, but the referee counted three anyway. That match would not air on television for another month, not until the November 4th edition of Superstars. So the Busters continued to defend the tag team belts all through the month of October until the title change finally aired on TV. No internet, folks, so you could do that sort of thing back then. 16 years ago this week, on this very day, in fact, October 5th, 1997, was one of the dark days in WWE history. It was the Bad Blood pay-per-view, which is actually more well-known for that classic Hell in a Cell, the very first Hell in a Cell between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, and the debut of Kane, who is still in the company to this day. But what some people perhaps don't know is that Vince McMahon actually opened the show. It was during the pre-show with a very stoic announcement about the death of Brian Pillman.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have some tragic news to report. Approximately 5 o'clock Central Time, we here in the World Wrestling Federation were notified that Brian Pillman has passed away. Brian Pillman was last with the World Wrestling Federation last night in St. Paul, Minnesota, and he was found dead in his hotel room in Bloomington, Minnesota, this afternoon. At this juncture, we do not have any more information other than to tell you that Brian Pillman is dead. We here at the World Wrestling Federation offer our condolences to the Pillman family.
Pillman was supposed to work on that pay-per-view against Goldust. There was a feud going on at the time on TV where Pillman had kidnapped Terry Marlena, Goldust's wife at the time. Obviously, that whole storyline got dropped cold after that. The next night on Raw was the very first time that we had a Raw show that was essentially dedicated to the memory of a wrestler who had just passed away, and the show opened with all the wrestlers on stage for a 10-bell salute. The only other time I could think of them doing a similar 10-bell salute on Raw, and maybe there was an isolated time here and there, was in 93, when Raw first actually came on the air in January. Later that month, they had a 10-bell salute in the middle of the show, I think, for Andre the Giant, who had just passed away. But I think aside from that, this was the first, unfortunately, the first of what would be many other instances to come, whether it was Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. I know there have been other wrestlers as well, but it was just a very sad, a sad night. And people to this day will also argue how tasteful it was for Vince McMahon to have Brian's widow, Melanie, on Raw the next night. He actually promoted a segment throughout the show saying that live via satellite we're going to go to an exclusive interview with Brian Pillman's wife, his widow, and he's asking her questions on the air. They do the split screen, and you could tell she's very uncomfortable. I mean, her husband just died, 24 hours earlier. And this was in the middle of the Monday Night Wars. Was that his main motivation for putting her on the air? I mean, who knows? It was very uncomfortable, I think, even at that time. And it was weird for me because, again, I celebrated my birthday the next day. So when they did that Raw show with the 10-bell salute to Pillman, that was on my birthday back in 97. And I was actually on a trip down in Florida. So I was completely out of the loop, very upset that I was missing the Bad Blood pay-per-view that weekend, which I was actually looking forward to a lot more than I am Battleground this weekend. At the time, I called into some wrestling hotline. It was like a toll-free hotline that was available, and I could call in for the latest news and results and stuff. So I found out about Brian Pillman's death not by listening to Vince McMahon, which you just heard. I called into some wrestling hotline from down in Florida, and it hit me like a punch to the gut. I couldn't believe it. It was just like, wow. 14 years ago this week, on October 3rd, 1999, came the blockbuster news that WWF writers Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara jumped ship to WCW after a secret meeting with WCW management over the weekend. Neither man was under contract at the time, so they were basically free agents. They can go where they wanted to. This happened on a Sunday, so they left Vince McMahon high and dry the day before Raw. And they may have already had the full show written normally, I'm sure, a couple of days in advance at least. But still, that had to be a very chaotic situation for WWE, being left in a lurch like that. WWE.com posted a note acknowledging Russo's departure and referring to him as one of the creative writers. This was a big deal at the time it went down. It was supposed to be this big game-changing move for WCW and a big blow to the WWF. And as history would show, it turned out to be a game-changer all right, but wasn't so much a blow to WWE as much as it was to WCW. Many people think the year 2000 was actually WWE's best year, both creatively and from an in-ring talent perspective. Austin was out after neck surgery, So Rock and Triple H picked up the slack. They carried things. Triple H really came into his own as a main eventer. The Radicals jumped ship. So you had Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero now on the roster. Kurt Angle had maybe the best first year of anybody ever in WWE, besides maybe Brock Lesnar. And, you know, became a main eventer in a very short period of time. Became WWE champion. Undertaker completely reinvented his character for the first time. Came back as the American Badass. WWE made the jump to TNN, which is now Spike TV. So after 20 plus years with the USA Network, they left for a new channel. That turned out not to be the greatest move, but a lot of things happened the year following Russo's departure, and the company continued to do just fine. WCW, not so much. And you can't lay all of that at Vince Russo's feet, but no doubt about it, he sped up the demise of that company. 9 years ago this week, on October 1, 2004, WWE very quietly rolled out its 24/7 video on demand service to Blue Ridge Cable customers up in Pennsylvania. $6.95 a month is what they were charging. They're actually not charging much more than that now. I remember this vividly because I was very, very angry with my cable company, the fact that they weren't carrying it. Although, to be fair, not many were at the time. In fact, one of the biggest cable companies in the country, Time Warner Cable, right here in New York City, still does not carry WWE Classics on demand, even today. So, thankfully, we've had it here on Cablevision for a number of years, and it's great. Although, the selection could be better, and I don't have time to watch it nearly as much as I would like to. If this new network ever launches, they're going to kill off this service. I know they are. So the longer that drags on, this thing gets a stay of execution, and that's fine by me. 8 years ago this week, on October 3rd, 2005, WWE made its grand return back to the USA Network with a special homecoming edition of Monday Night Raw, which featured Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle going to a 30-minute draw in an Iron Man match, two falls apiece. It's a great match. Not as good as their WrestleMania 21 match, but still just excellent stuff. Michaels challenged Kurt to come back for sudden death, but Kurt just walked out. Edge beat Matt Hardy in a Loser Leaves Raw match. A Loser Leaves Raw ladder match, more specifically, with Edge's Money in the Bank briefcase hanging above the ring. This was effectively the end of the Edge-Matt Hardy feud, which could have been a career-defining feud for Matt Hardy, but he came out of it looking like a loser. Lost this match. He was banished to SmackDown while Edge's career flourished. And in fact, Edge would win his first WWE Championship only a few months later. Stone Cold Steve Austin gave stunners on this show to all four members of the McMahon family in a rather memorable segment that featured one of the worst Stone Cold stunners I've ever seen, courtesy of Linda McMahon. Bless her heart, she's not a worker, so it's not her fault. I say one of the worst because I can't decide which is worse, the stunner to Linda, the stunner to Donald Trump at WrestleMania 23, and this is kind of an obscure one, but I still remember it. The stunner that Steve Austin gave to Vince McMahon on Raw, this one time, it was during Austin's heel run, and there was a match between Vince and Shane. And Kurt Angle, that was the show where Kurt Angle turned his back on the WWF and joined the Alliance. He was knocking WWF guys left and right with a steel chair. And Austin goes to give Vince a stunner before throwing Shane on top of Vince for the pin. So he kicks Vince in the gut, he goes to hook his head, and Vince just drops like a sack of potatoes before Austin even executes the move. That was a pretty terrible one. Still, I think the best phantom stunner I've ever seen was on an episode once of Sunday Night Heat, where Austin stunnered like 10 different referees, and he went to stun referee Tim White. Good old Tim White from the Friendly Tap. The only problem is when he went to drop down, Tim White did not follow him. So it looked quite literally like Austin was stunning the Invisible Man. I don't consider that one of the worst. I actually consider that one of the best. It was so hilarious. And finally on this homecoming show, Mean Gene Okerlund interviewed Hulk Hogan, who asked the fans what they would think if the Hulkster one day were to step inside the ring with that rattlesnake, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And the place went nuts, and that was the end of the segment. There had been rumors at the time that WWE was trying to put together a Hogan vs. Austin match for WrestleMania 22 in Chicago. The problem is, Austin wasn't interested in wrestling Hogan, and nobody apparently bothered to tell Austin that Hogan was going to go out there and say that. And suffice to say, he was not happy about that at all. It was almost like, hey, we're going to have Hogan plant the seed for the match on TV, and people are going to be all excited about it, and so Austin will have no choice but to give in and do the match. And it didn't quite work out that way. You know, these days Austin talks about wishing he had had a chance to step in the ring with Hogan at some point during his career, but at the time he had very little interest because he thought it would be a shitty match, number one. And on some level, I imagine he must have had some reservations about doing business with Hulk, maybe being upstaged by him. Hogan was still getting the nostalgia pops from the crowd. I mean, look what happened with Rock at WrestleMania 18. Plus, Hogan had full creative control, so would Austin be okay doing the job for the old man, if that's what Hogan wanted? It's probably something he just didn't want to have to deal with. 6 years ago this week, on October 2nd, 2007, WWE Champion John Cena was diagnosed as having torn his right pectoral muscle. This after performing a hip toss on Mr. Kennedy during a Raw main event. I remember that spot. It happened right at the beginning of the match. And to his credit, Cena wrestled for several more minutes with that torn pec. He even took an RKO on the announce table from Randy Orton when the match was over. And despite all of this, the serious nature of the pec tear, normally an injury like that keeps people out 6-8 months. Instead, John Cena was able to make a surprise return less than 4 months later at the Royal Rumble, and he won the whole damn thing. And to come back that quickly from an injury that serious and not even look any different, it really is something else. I guess it's just those freaky genetics, I guess. And finally, 3 years ago this week, on October 3rd, 2010, at WWE's Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, Wade Barrett, remember him? That guy who led the Nexus? He pinned John Cena in a match where if Cena lost, he would be forced to join the Nexus as its newest member. Cena had Barrett locked in the STF when Curtis Axel ran in from the crowd. It looked like a fan had gotten loose. Nobody knew who he was. Security tackled him. While all of that was going on, Husky Harris from NXT Season 2, now Bray Wyatt, he ran in from the other side, hit Cena with a steel pipe, allowing Barrett to steal the pin. Biggest win of Wade Barrett's career, that's for sure. Main event of the show, Kane beat The Undertaker to retain the World Heavyweight title in a Hell in a Cell match when Paul Bearer turned on The Undertaker. Again. Man, you'd think he'd learn his lesson the first time. I remember that whole series of Undertaker-Kane matches from 2010. It was the first time I could ever remember Undertaker putting Kane over that strongly. I mean, when they feuded back in the late 90s, I mean, Kane may have gotten a win here and there, but for the most part, it was like Austin Rock, right? Back in the day, Rock did not win very many matches over Steve Austin. It was always Austin beating Rock. And likewise, with Undertaker and Kane, more often than not, it was Undertaker beating his little brother. But here we are, you know, 2010, Undertaker, a lot older, not in the best of physical shape. Kane finally having a decent run with the world championship. I think Undertaker lost to him in like 3 straight pay-per-view matches. And Undertaker never got his win back. I figured he would go away for a few months and come back and beat Kane. Nope, never happened. He put his brother over, finally. But unfortunately, those matches really weren't that good. That's the only downside to the whole thing. And that's This Week in Wrestling History. I want to thank everybody who tuned into the show this week for your support. I'm very happy that you joined me here, and I hope you enjoyed yourself. Please continue to send your questions in to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @solemonster is my handle, and you can send a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/thesolemonster. Don't forget, we also have a official Sound Off Facebook group. It is a closed group. We have well over 500 members strong now. You can apply for a membership, and I will approve you there. So if you search out the group, we are not hard to find. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, we have an official YouTube channel. We've been picking up a lot of subscribers left and right. Hopefully you're one of them. I am planning on doing my next review, which will probably be of the new Triple H DVD. Getting that up on the YouTube channel sometime in the next few weeks. So subscribe. My username is TheSolemonster. All one word. You can type it in the YouTube search box. It should be the first thing that comes up. Hit the subscribe button. And when the new videos go up, you will be alerted about it. So please sign up there. And please take a look at some of the shirts we have up in the Sound Off Superstore. Solomonster.Spreadshirt.com, the new TNA Total Nonstop Absurdity shirt. Just flying off the shelf. Well, not really, but you should definitely take a look at it. And we have a whole bunch of logo shirts up there as well. There'll be other items added in the weeks to come. So buy a shirt, make a PayPal donation on Solomonster.com. Whatever you can do to support the show is very much appreciated. So that's going to do it for episode 295. Enjoy Battleground this weekend for those of you who are brave enough to spend the money. We'll be back here with a full wrap-up of everything next weekend on episode 296. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you to everybody who sent in birthday wishes. And we'll be right back here with a new show next week. Until then, take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off, giving you the good. The bad.
Raw is now 3 hours every Monday at 8.
And the ugly.
Hello. Why does Jerry Lawler insist on telling us that we are just getting started? What the fuck have I been watching for the past 2 hours?
Well, mostly the good.
I don't want to K-fab you.
You're going to K-fab me?
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007 on the Solomonster.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio, the Solomonster Sounds Off.